story. But I reached into Vadim's coat and removed the cache of dream fuel vials. You'll have to take my word that this is the genuine article, of course. I'm not in the habit of taking anyone's word on anything, the man said. Pass me one of those vials. Another calculated risk. The man might run off with one, but that would still leave me with the others. I'll throw you one. How does that sound? The man took a few steps towards me. Do it, then. I tossed him the vial. He caught it deftly, and then vanished into the vehicle. The woman remained outside, still covering me with the little gun. A few moments passed, then the man emerged from the vehicle again, not bothering to don his hat. He held up the vial. This seems to be the genuine article. What did you do? Shone a light through it, of course. He looked at me as if I was stupid. Dream fuel has a unique absorption spectrum. Good. Now that you know it's real, throw the vial back to me and we'll negotiate terms. The man made a throwing gesture, but pulled at the last moment, holding the vial in front of him tauntingly. No, let's not be hasty, shall we? You have more of these, you say. Dream fuel's in short supply these days, at least the good stuff. You must have stumbled on quite a haul. He paused. I've done you a favor, which we'll think of as fair payment for this vial. I've asked that another cable car meet you here shortly. You'd better not have been lying about your means. He removed his goggles, revealing iron grey eyes of extraordinary cruelty. I'm grateful, I said, but what would it matter if I had been lying? That's an odd question. The woman made her weapon vanish, like a well-rehearsed conjuring trick. Perhaps it had sprung back into a sleeve holster. I told you, I'm curious. There is no law here, she said, a kind of law in the canopy, but only that which suits us, that which conveniences us, like the playground law of children. But we're not in the canopy now. Down here, anything goes, and we have very little patience with those who deceive us. That's all right, I said. I'm not a patient man myself. They both climbed into their vehicle, momentarily leaving the door splayed open. Perhaps we'll see you in the canopy, the man said, and then smiled at me. It was not the kind of smile one relished. It was the kind of smile I had seen on snakes in the Vivaria at the reptile house. The doors clammed down and their vehicle came to life with a subliminal hum. The three telescopic arms on the roof of the cable car swung outwards and upwards, and then continued extending outwards at blinding speed, doubling, tripling, quadrupling their length. They were reaching skywards. I looked up, shielding my eyes against the perpetual embalming rain. The rickshaw driver had pointed out that the cables spanning the gnarled structures of the canopy occasionally draped down to the level of the mulch, like hanging vines, but I hadn't paid enough attention to his remark. Now I saw the significance of it as one of the car's arms snagged the lowest line with its hooked claw. The other two arms extended even further, out to perhaps 10 times their original length, until they found their own draping lines and made purchase. And then, smoothly, as if it were lifting on thrusters, the cable car pulled itself aloft, accelerating all the time. The nearest arm released its grip on the cable, contracted and jerked, stabbing upwards with the speed of a chameleon's tongue until it had locked around another cable. And while that happened, the car rose further still, and then another arm switched cables, and another, until the car was hundreds of